Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Claire LeGrand, author of Some Kind of Happiness, a book inspired, in part, by a childhood of undiagnosed anxiety and depression. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 319 of the podcast with Claire LeGrand. Claire's newest novel for middle grade readers came out a few months back, and its cover beckoned me to read it. I trust you've had that experience as well, a beautifully designed cover. But what was waiting for me in the pages of Some Kind of Happiness took me on a journey that was vivid and captivating, and one I was not at all prepared to make. It was just what I needed. This conversation, as it turns out, shares a lot of ties with my experience reading the book. I hope you enjoy. Claire's giving away a signed copy of Some Kind of Happiness to one lucky podcast listener, and I hope that listener might be you. So make sure you check out the podcast article on allthewonders.com after listening and enter to win. Anyways, here's episode number 319 of the podcast with Claire LeGrand. Welcome to the podcast, Claire LeGrand. I am so excited. I'm so happy. I'm so overjoyed that you're here with me tonight.
Thank you so much for having me on your excellent podcast. I am also very excited. I sound really chill right now, but inside I'm like super bouncing all over the walls.
Good. Claire, I'm freaking out. And I'm just going to tell you that up front. And listeners can hear it and whatever. I'm always freaking out. But this book, I said to you before we recorded that I don't often talk to middle grade folks, probably like I talk to maybe one a month, which is to say that in general, I probably read 12 or 15 middle grade novels a month or a year, and they come to me by recommendation and by friends that recommend. And Claire, when Danielle, our mutual friend Danielle, said to me, after I complimented the cover of Some Kind of Happiness, she said, you need to read it. There's a truth to her words there that I can't even articulate. I won't be able to articulate tonight. Your book is gorgeous, and it is exactly the book. I should say it this way. I am exactly the reader for your book.
Oh, that makes me so happy. As you can probably tell, having read the book, it's a very personal and special book to me. So whenever I hear of people being moved by it and enjoying it, it makes me very, very happy. So thank you for that. I'm really glad that you enjoyed it.
Oh, I love it. I'm going to do the thing that I think is the best thing to do for people that haven't read the book. And that is I'm going to do my very best not to spoil anything in it, but to talk more about sort of the essence of the story. But before I do that, I want to let you share, because I know that Some Kind of Happiness has been out for a couple weeks or months. So you've had a chance to maybe talk about it a little bit. How do you share the story of the book with people that haven't read it yet?
Okay. Yeah. So Some Kind of Happiness came out in May of 2016, and it is a story about an 11-year-old girl named Finley Hart who suffers from undiagnosed anxiety and depression, but she's 11, so she doesn't know what that is. She doesn't have the vocabulary to articulate what she's feeling. She just knows that she's feeling a lot of really troubling and difficult and scary things. And she, it's a book about her figuring out that it's okay to ask for help. She hides these feelings from her parents and everyone she knows because she doesn't want anyone to think that she's weird or broken. She's also kind of in a state of denial because these feelings that she's experiencing scare her, and it's just a way of her coping is to pretend that nothing is wrong. And her parents are having marital problems, and so she doesn't want to add to their burden. She doesn't want to be a burden to them, I should say. So she hides all of that, and over the course of the book, she begins to learn that it's okay to ask for help, and that because she has these disorders, it doesn't mean that she's a broken person or that she's somehow wrong or incomplete. It's just part of who she is. And throughout the book, she's staying in her grandparents' house for a summer, and she's been estranged from her family for her entire life because of some dramatic thing that happened between her parent or her father and his family that she doesn't know about at the beginning of the book. She just knows that she's never met her grandparents before, or her aunts or uncles or cousins. And her parents take her to her grandparents' house for the summer because they need some space to focus on their marriage and try to fix it. They don't say it like that, but Finley's very smart. She notices everything, and she knows exactly what's going on. So she's all of a sudden she's dropped in this house full of all these strangers, and it's strange to her because she doesn't know them, but she can see herself and her father and their faces. And she is dropped into a family that likes to pretend that nothing is wrong ever, and they are very focused on appearances, and they're very focused on everything looking and feeling and acting a certain way. So Finley feels even more pressure to hide what's wrong with her. But she forms relationships with her cousins and the wild boys next door over the course of the summer, and they find this old burned out house in the woods behind her grandparents' house, and they're trying to solve this mystery and having all these fun adventures in the woods. And Finley sort of comes into her own as the ringleader of this group, and she captivates her cousins and her neighbors with her imagination. So it's it's a bit of Bridge to Terabithia meets Counting by Sevens, where you have, this fun adventure and magic in the woods with all these kids, and then you also have paired with that this story of a girl who's coming to terms with very challenging emotional problems. And so that's the gist of the story. I was about to go into a whole thing, but you're probably going to ask me questions, so I won't just like sit here and talk the whole time.
No, well, let's before we get into the sort of the background, the what brought you to do this, I want to spend some time with Finley because she is, from the moment we meet her, she's a character that I think you can sense a. I don't want to say the word is not a fragility to her, but I think that as a reader, I wanted to be careful with how I understood her. That's what I felt approaching her, that I felt like there, she's in a situation here, being moved away from her mother and father to live with this family that lives out in the middle of what feels like nowhere, in a place unfamiliar to her, with people that are unfamiliar to her, where it just felt immediately unsettling that to go your whole life and not know these people, and very early on to hear that you've been invited to come over and over and over, and for some reason your dad has never brought you out, I thought was something particularly effective in establishing that world. And I also loved in the character, I'm trying to find it, I'm like flipping through, but I was so in love with your book, Claire, that I didn't dare dog ear a single page. And I'm
Well, I
realizing
appreciate
now
that.
that was a mistake, because now I can't like randomly flip through and find stuff. But there's a moment when they're when the whole family, before mom and dad leave Finley, the whole family is sitting around the table, and I like that Finley just says, sort of like, let me introduce you to everybody. And she kind of goes around the table and says, here's all the relationships. These are these kids. These are these people. And I just thought, what an effective way to set out who these people are. Aunt Dee is married to Uncle Nelson, who draws his words and looks like a cowboy without a horse. I just feel like the way that she's just sort of trying to compartmentalize everyone in order to have some understanding and order to being thrown into this. It was just, for me, it was just, again, it was establishing her world, but establishing the relationship I had to Finley as a reader as I went, that I just thought was so effective.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Finley is very dear to me, and you're right. She's trying desperately to establish some sense of order in this new chaotic place that she finds herself in. And she has never met these people. She's trying to remember everything that her parents have told her about them. It's almost like she's reciting the list of facts that she knows about these people and their relationships and their jobs and who's related to who, just to keep herself from totally freaking out, because she's very emotionally distressed at that point. She's afraid of what's happening with her parents. She's dreading their impending divorce. She thinks that that's what's happening. And she is all of a sudden surrounded by all of these people who seem so perfect and happy and lovely and don't seem like they have anything close to the kind of problems that she senses that she has. Yeah, it was that particular scene was challenging to write, but also really fun, because I had to introduce this pretty big cast of characters and do it in a way that felt organic to Finley as a character, and also in a way that did not feel overwhelming to a young reader. But I'm pleased with how it turned out.
I like it. Again, in establishing that world. I mean, because you're thrown into this character that, for those that haven't read it, you go between the story of Everwood, of this story being told to you of this magical world that I think from the very beginning, you know, there must be a connection to Finley and what's going on, but you don't get that until you're a little bit into the story. But
yeah.
But to have this magical world and then realize that Finley is writing about the Everwood, and then that incredible moment, and this was your Bridge to Terabithia moment, your Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe moment, the place where she sees the woods behind her grandparents' house and says, that's it. That's the place, this place that I've been. I'm going to find the words because it's so beautiful and I'll get to them. But the way that you word it, that she says, like, I had it all wrong. The way that I thought I understood the Everwood was wrong, and here I am in it, understanding it differently. I just thought that that magic that you can feel it, Claire, when you're, I mean, I don't know the experience that you went through while you were writing it, but reading it was just like there was something I could grab onto there. And that, even now talking about it, I can't wrap my words around it because I'm getting chills talking about it. But
I actually, not to sound like cheesy or tooting my own horn or whatever, but I actually just got chills while you were talking about it, because I was remembering how it felt to write that particular scene. It was a very crucial scene for me. And it was one of what's her name? Oh, Susan Dennard. I don't know if that's how you say her last name. She's a young adult author who's fantastic. And she talks a lot about craft. And I think she describes those kinds of scenes as like your cookie scenes. So the scenes that you as an author are really excited about writing. And you're like, okay, if I can get to this cookie scene, then I get to reward myself with this really great scene, you know, that means a lot to me. And so that was one of my cookie scenes, because I knew that it would be such an important moment for Finley. And I guess I should say for the reader, or for the podcast listener who hasn't read this book, one of the ways that Finley copes with her anxiety and her depression is writing. So she has a notebook and she writes stories about this magical forest kingdom of her own creation called the Everwood. And in her stories, you know, she usually casts herself as the intrepid orphan girl because, you know, in fairy tales and heroic quests that she's read about, it's always, you know, it's an orphan who has some sort of special ability or magical power, and they end up becoming the hero of the story. They start out lost, and yet somehow they end up saving the day. And Finley feels lost and sort of alone and broken because of all the difficult emotions she's struggling with and how deeply she's hurting and how thoroughly she's hiding that from everyone. So she writes all these stories to cope with what's going on inside of her. And then she arrives at her grandparents' house. And like you said, she discovers the woods behind their house and has this moment of just connection with these trees and this forest and this feeling of comfort and safety. I think there's a line, I don't have a copy of the book here with me, but I think there's a line in that scene where she says, "As long as I am here, I am safe." And so all of a sudden she has found a safe place in this new scary environment. And it's in those woods that seem to her as if it's her imagination come to life. So that was a really, really special scene for me. And I'm glad that it affected you as it did.
I found a part. May I read a part to you and yeah, excerpt absolutely. To you? This is so early on. But still, Gretchen is the first person to enter Everwood with Finley and
yeah, Gretchen is Finley's cousin. Sort of the first.
Sort of the first cousin to connect with her. Yes. Yeah. Even though we all know that, you know, the connection of, oh, this cousin's the same age as you, so you should naturally just be best friends. Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, that was my life growing up. I remember that. Oh, yeah, she's your age. You should just be best friends with her.
Yeah, and Finley's like, yeah, okay, Mom. Like, yeah. That's how it works.
when Finley is talking to Gretchen about the Everwood, mm-hmm. Gretchen mm-hmm. asks, "Are they the only people who live in the Everwood?" asked Gretchen. "Oh, no, lots of other people live there. There are witches and barrows, these digging creatures with huge mouths like shovels. They live underground, and you have to be careful where you step, because they can reach up and grab you. And there are fire-breathing salamanders with poisonous drool, and fairies that will play tricks on you if they decide they don't like you. And sometimes there are knights, if one gets lost during a quest." "Ooh!" Gretchen shoots upright, her hand in the air. "Me! I want to be a knight, can I?" "What? A knight? I'd be a great knight. Would I get a horse? Would I fight dragons?" My thoughts spin out of control. What does Gretchen mean? Can she be a knight? The Everwood is not a game. It's not a thing you play at. It is a thing that already exists. You can't simply become a part of something that doesn't belong to you. Something you've only just learned about. Whew. Claire! Girl, man, that's what I'm talking about. That was, I think, maybe one of the first declarations that Finley had in for us readers, in the way that Finley is also asserting the Everwood to the other people that are going into this world with her, where I just felt like this is a reality. This is a place for her that means something, that we, knowing we're going to go on this journey, we will ultimately get to learn what it means to her too, but we are Gretchen in that moment. We are, "I want to play with you too. I want to enter this world." And she says, no, it's not a game. It's not something you play. That's not what this mm-hmm. is.
Yeah. No, it's sacred for her.
It's sacred.
Like it's her lifeline. It's what has kept her from breaking. So yeah, that is, it was so fun hearing that. I don't like to go back and reread, except for like at readings when I have to read, but I don't like to go back and reread my books because inevitably I'll find something like, oh, I wish I could change that, or, you know, but hearing that was really nice. I love the two of them. I love Finley and Gretchen's relationship, throughout the book, and how Gretchen is so open to the whole thing right from the beginning. You know, she accepts Finley and accepts the Everwood, and she's so game for it. You know, she's up for anything.
Yeah. She's precisely what Finley needs to start unlocking a lot of that tension she has about being just dropped off in this house. Mm-hmm. Gretchen is immediately that safe place.
Yes. Yes. And it is, I'm so glad that you picked up on that it isn't it isn't a game for her. I mean, it's in the text, of course, but that you picked up on the significance of that moment where she's butting up for the first time against the possibility of someone else knowing about the Everwood and sharing that with her. And she doesn't know how she feels about that. You know, are these people going to treat it right? You know, am I making a huge mistake by even mentioning this? It's a big moment for her.
It is. So, Claire, how did or when did Finley walk into your life?
Goodness. So
can I jump in? Okay. Actually, I'm sorry. I should ask more properly. Mm-hmm. Was Finley the first one to walk into your life, or was it perhaps Gretchen, or was it something else entirely?
No, Finley was definitely the first character in this book. I guess if you consider the Everwood a character, which I kind of do, because it's so intertwined with who Finley is and how she processes everything that happens to her.
Yeah.
And I tried very hard, and I'm happy with how it turned out, to make the Everwood feel like a sort of tangible entity throughout the book. You know, it's a presence, it's Finley's companion, and she relates everything that happens to her back to this idea of the Everwood and the presence of these trees. And when I was growing up, I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house, and I had a lot of cousins, and there were these woods behind my grandparents' house, and we spent hours and hours, you know, playing in those trees and making up pretend games, and we had all our little rules of how the games worked and what territory was belonged to which cousins, and, you know, so there was this whole, as kids do when they're young and they're out playing, they create their own little world and their power hierarchies and territories and rules, and we did that. And it's funny because going back now to my grandparents' house, the woods, quote unquote, are actually really just kind of a cluster of trees, and it's not as big as it felt when I was a kid. but when I was a kid, it felt like the whole world, and it was such a place of safety for me. So I wanted, my whole life, I've wanted to write something that was sort of an homage to that feeling of possibility when you step into woods or find a creek or find some kind of secret thing in nature as a kid, and it becomes this sacred, magical place for you. I wanted to write a story that was a love song to that feeling and that time in a kid's life. And I also, like Finley, have anxiety and depression, and I wanted to write something that I basically wanted to write a book for me at age 11, because I didn't realize until much later in life that I had these disorders. I experienced the symptoms, but I didn't know what they were, and I just thought they were weird and kind of tried to hide them and then moved on. And I didn't address what these things were or figure out how to really take care of myself and be a healthy person until I was in college. You know, when you're 10, 11 years old, people don't really, for the most part, talk about depression and anxiety with 10, 11 year old kids. A lot of the time at that age it's a really difficult age, you know, middle school, and it's just a difficult time. And a lot of these symptoms manifest at that age. And yet it's not an age when adults really think about things like mental illness. And so it's not typically, in my experience, I'm not an expert, but in my anecdotal experience, it's not something that's addressed until later in life, as it was with me. So I wanted to write one, a story that was a love song to that, you know, big family playing in the woods from dawn till dusk, magic adventure, just that magical time that I had as a kid and creating my own world. And then also a story that kids like me, like I was at that age, that kids like me can read, and even adults like me can read and see themselves reflected in it, and maybe also learn how to be empathetic to people who suffer from those disorders, even when they themselves don't. So, that's how this book came to be. The Everwood is sort of my memory, my childhood memory of playing out in the woods behind my grandparents' house. And it's stuck with me since I was a kid. And so I guess the Everwood is really the first character to appear to me. And then it was actually my boyfriend who suggested, you know, I was trying to figure out what book to write next, this was, I guess, a few years ago. I was like, what book am I going to write next? I don't know. I had to show my editor a proposal, and he was like, well, why don't you write about a kid who has anxiety and depression like you do? And we talked about that. And I, you know, from that conversation sort of grew organically a bunch of, you know, nights brainstorming and thinking and listening to music. And that's kind of how Finley was born. All these pieces floating around in my mind coalesced into this story. That was a really long answer to your question.
No,
but
Claire, I want to thank you for being so honest with me. And
you're welcome.
For spending the time and for going on the journey to make this a story and to make this Finley story and to make this book exactly what it is. And I'm grateful that on the other side, it came out the way that it did. Cause I think that, being able to articulate not only the feelings that you've learned to cope with, mm-hmm. And maybe even some that you still struggle with as an adult, but mm-hmm. also to be able to place them in an 11-year-old child and to be able to put yourself in the position of how would I want someone to mm-hmm. to connect with me at that age.
Exactly.
I think is something that it's a journey that causes you to perhaps expose yourself a lot more than would normally be comfortable.
Yeah, I have to say I'm really comfortable talking about all of this. I mean, some people, I know they come up to me and they say, thank you for talking, like at readings or events or whatever, they come up afterward and get their book signed and thank you so much for talking about this. You know, I struggle with this, or somebody I know struggles with this, and it's really nice to hear someone talk about it. And I'm glad for that. I wish that part of my, I hate to say mission, because it's not really that, but part of my mission with this book is to use it as a platform from which to talk about these things openly.
Yeah.
Especially with kids, you know. I think it's very important to speak candidly about mental illness and not have it be this like scary phantom thing that no one wants to look at directly, because then it just gets bigger and scarier and harder to deal with. But yeah, I actually feel like super comfortable at this point talking about it. The whole process of writing this book was incredibly cathartic.
Great.
Yeah, it was just, it wasn't like this, you know, oh, this like painful, angst filled thing where I was like, you know, crying over my computer as I was writing. You know, it was really like, it's, you know, a heavier book in that it deals with some really important, challenging subjects, but it's also a book that I feel is full of joy and hope and, you know, this family forging connections that hadn't been there before, and this family rediscovering things like joy and truth and imagination, this family that has been hurting for a long time coming together and healing, and Finley is the catalyst for that. She's the hero of this story. She's the hero, even though she's not like a loud, brash, you know, sassy warrior. You know, she's not a fighter. She's an observer. She's a writer and a dreamer, and she's still undoubtedly the hero of this story. And that was also something very important to me to write. You know, not all heroes are fighters. Not all heroes are loud. Sometimes heroes are the small, unassuming people who don't really make themselves known, you know? So yeah, I'm really comfortable talking about it. And thank you for like listening to me talk about it. I hope it doesn't make you feel uncomfortable.
No,
but I think,
Claire, where I come from, and I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead. I'm
sorry. No, I was really just rambling, so I'm glad that you cut me off, because I would have just kept going awkwardly for like another 5 minutes.
Well, so where I come from, we all come from different places. I know when we read a book, and I love the expression of books as mirrors and windows. That's mm-hmm. that's a wonderful thing. But where I come from this, not to unload too much on you, but I do have experience with depression and anxiety in my family. And I come from sort of a different place where I'm now working a lot of this out through professional help, where a lot of the things that but my mom was struggling with her chronic pain and her depression were very much normalized. And so nothing was a big deal. No trips to hospitals were big deals. No time away was a big deal. And so when I come from that place, I guess as an adult, only now have I started to feel the weight of all of the stuff that my mom was going through, how much I think that she and my dad were trying to protect me and us kids from some of the bigger stuff going on. So when I'm going on this journey with Finley, when I'm getting to know her, when I'm learning more about her, it's as if I have the opportunity to experience understanding this as a child myself, when I never had that opportunity to understand it. It was just sort of a thing that was just like, my mom has brown hair and she works at a bank and she has chronic depression and pain. Like it was just like, you know, it wasn't that they played it down. I think that it was more that they were trying to protect me. But I think that in 20 or 30 years, we've come a long way with mental illness and the way we talk about it. And so I think that it's a wonderful thing that we're in a position now where we do have authors such as yourself that are able to talk to our readers who now have the benefit of growing up in a world where we're able to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, it is. I am very happy for kids growing up right now, because you're absolutely right. We have come a long way in the last 20 or 30 years. And I think that it's much more acceptable and encouraged to talk about these things. And it's interesting that you mentioned how, you know, given your life and your experience, you come to Finley's story, you know, from a different perspective. And it was also important to me when writing this book to illustrate through the different characters around Finley how different people process things when they come up against someone in their life or they encounter someone in their life who has mental illness, and not everyone handles it well and everyone's going to handle it in a different way. And it's, I think, important to illustrate that in stories about mental illness for kids. Like, it's, you know, to introduce them to different coping mechanisms that they might see demonstrated by people around them, and to teach them that, you know, these people, they may not be handling it well, but they're ultimately good people, and they, you know, they, most of them anyway, you know, they mean well, they love you, they're trying to cope as best they can, and they're not always going to get it right, but they're trying. You know, and so that was something I also wanted to do with this book, because, you know, every family treats mental illness differently, and there are all kinds of ways of tackling it and emotionally processing it. And so I hope that through all the different characters in the story, kids are able to see that and recognize that and use that to help them in their own lives.
Yeah, I think that there will be someone in this story that every reader can connect with. And I think that by bringing people sort of slowly into Finley's life, they're all there. Everyone exists, but sort of individuals come into focus at different times. I think that too allows for readers to see where they fit and to see where there are similar individuals in their own life.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm caught in this place, Claire, where I feel like I'm rambling. Ah, this is what happens.
It's okay. We ramble together. It's all good.
It's such a beautiful book. And I think that it's probably the book I read this year that I felt like I need to be really careful with the words I choose about this book, because it felt like a special story in that way that I don't want to tell other people how to read it or how to interpret it, mostly because there's a very special way that I read it and that it connected with me. And I wanted to be special. No. I was just saying I sort of just wanted to go on and be special for other people. And it matters a great deal to me hearing where you came from with it, because it just feels like all the more special that your name is on this book and that this is a book that was shared with me and is shared with all of these other readers. That's a really special thing.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I like how you keep saying, you know, that you want to be very careful in how you describe the book and you want to preserve that experience for others. I hope I haven't like gone into too much detail in the podcast and ruined it for everyone.
No, I don't think at all.
Okay, good.
We've barely talked about the Everwood, and that junk is insane, let me tell you. And the house in the woods, come on. Did you have a house? Did you have a house in the woods?
No, I didn't. Did you have a house in the woods?
My grandfather, my mom grew up in central Pennsylvania, up in the mountains, in a place actually called Mountaintop, which is up by Wilkes-Barre. And my grandfather owned a whole bunch of land, and I used to go spend summers up there and work at his hardware store. I would go up there for a week or 2 weeks, work at the hardware store, and eventually my brother started coming up with me. But when I got bored of working in the hardware store, I would just go explore the creek and the woods, and there was a little bit of a quarry that was there, I remember. And I remember not only was there like an old shed that, again, from you said your memory of the woods was that they were vast, but then when you went back, you realized that they were just like a cluster of trees. For me,
cluster of trees.
There you go. For me, there was this shed that was like miles into the woods, but really, now that we've gone up very recently, I realized that, oh, it was like within sight of the house. It was like really not that long off. It must have just been that in my meandering and coming back around. Mm-hmm. But I just remember there being this place that was probably a shed that was abandoned that he just hadn't used in forever because the wood had started to rot and whatever. There was nothing in it. It was just dusty and had like some old rusty tools in it. But that was a place for us. There was magic there. I forget the way you worded it earlier, but the feeling of the, however you word it, that stuck with me was that when you discover, there are places that you discover that you can feel yourself overwhelmed with the weight and the magic of that place, of that scene, of that thing you happened upon in nature. And sure enough, that is what it felt like, that this is not a natural thing, that this exists here. There's something special about this thing.
Exactly.
I'm sorry you did not have a magical house, but let me tell you, you had magical woods, and that is awesome. That kind of stuff. That junk sticks with you, man.
It does. It does. And like everybody I've talked to, you know, shared this story about the woods behind my grandparents' house. They're like, oh yeah, I had, you know, this like field or this weird tree or this cool creek. You know, it seems like everybody has a little piece of nature like that from their childhood that sticks with them. And I wanted to recapture that feeling, especially for adult readers, because kid readers hopefully are still kind of in that place where, you know, if you open your wardrobe, maybe you'll make it into Narnia. I hope that most kids reading the book are still in that place. But for adults, I hoped that reading this book would sort of send them back to that place where things like that were still possible.
You know, it strikes me, we talk a lot about now about how when I was a kid, I was able to run around the woods and do all that. And kids can't really do that much anymore. But it strikes me that some of the things that we think are so special as a child, like you said, it can be a tree, that our memory becomes overwhelmed with the possibility of this object or this space, that it doesn't matter. It doesn't need to be, you know, endless woods in your backyard. It can just be a thing you can lose yourself in.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Oh, now I want to go like hiking or something.
No, right?
I want to go and commune with nature.
I will go to school tomorrow and think, you know, we have this pond behind our school that we can have like an outdoor classroom there. But
that's great.
To go down there and to talk to the children about how, you know, right now all of the frogs are hibernating in there, in these little like mud bubbles that they're hibernating in. And just to think, like, there are worlds here that are a stone's throw from where you're learning, that it's just amazing. Okay, before we go.
I love that.
There's a thing. Well, I mean, this is why I hope this is part of why you write for children. It's certainly why I work with children, because they're just connected to that thing that we as an adult are constantly grasping at, trying to hold again. The kids have it right there in their hands, that thing that we don't know how to put words to, that wonder that they just see in all things. They just see it. They see it when they look at you and when they look at other things and they smile and they lose themselves. They see that thing. That's why I work with children, so that I can be just a little closer to that wonder that they experience all the time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why I write for children. You know, I write children's books because I love writing about that, especially in middle grade. I also write young adult books, but especially in middle grade, readers of that age are at this sweet spot between childhood and adolescence. They have one foot in their childhood. They have one foot in their teenage years, and they're starting to learn more about the world and like realize what the real world is like. And yet at the same time, like I said a couple of minutes ago, like they still kind of think that if they open their wardrobe and rustle through the, not that anyone has wardrobes in Texas, but in some places they do, but they still kind of think that if they open their wardrobe or their closet or go into their basement or whatever it is, and they rustle through the coats and the boxes, maybe they'll find, you know, a secret opening to Narnia or Fairyland or whatever it is. And I love writing for kids who still, I love writing for readers who still have that sense of like, oh yeah, that could totally happen. And so they're with you. They're with you so completely as readers, because as long as it is emotionally authentic and strikes something true within them, then they're there with you. They'll accept whatever crazy fantasy story, dragons, wizards, magic you can conjure up. You know, they're there for it. They're so open as readers. Their imaginations are so open. And I love writing for readers like that. I also love that children's books are infused with such a sense of hope. Like something that's really important for me as a writer of middle grade fiction is I want these kids, even if things get dark and scary, as they do often for Finley, like she gets to some scary emotional places, and she's dealing with a lot of, you know, tough, like family stuff. But I always want, even when the scary stuff is happening, I always want readers to feel safe, to feel like I'm leading them through this scary environment. Yes, but I have their hand in mine and I'm not letting go and it's going to be okay. And so I really work hard to do that with my books. And so I love that there is this sense of hope and safety and like, we're going to be okay, we're going to get through this in kids' books. It's just so spiritually refreshing to write books like that. I'm with you. The kids are amazing and their imaginations are amazing, and I love writing for them.
Well, you do it, Claire LeGrand. You write so beautifully. I love the way you put words down on paper. And I love the reference I wanted to bring up that I hadn't yet, but your writing, I think it's undeniable. The connection for me, the connection of Some Kind of Happiness to Wildwood by Colin Malloy.
Oh yes. By Colin Malloy.
Mm-hmm. That language that he uses, the way that he plays with words and the way he brings you into that other world feels so much like I feel in your book, that it's coming from a storyteller that's been there and that's lived those woods and has gone exploring and lost themselves and found themselves somewhere magical like that. So I'm so grateful that my readers have Some Kind of Happiness, that you wrote it, that it's so beautiful that I get to read the words to you. I'm overwhelmed with how wonderful the book was and just beside myself to get to hear more from you about it, because it makes me love the story even more. So just, I guess, all in all, Claire, just thank you for every minute of it, every word.
Thank you so much. It's been so great to talk to you. I'm so glad that you love the book. And thank you for all the work that you do with the podcast and with kids every day. You do important work.
you know, it's the books like these that just keep drawing me back in. It's such a wonderful treat. I mean, I we could stay here forever. I'm going to leave you with your readers, with your children, because all I keep thinking is just what a wonderful, amazing world that they're inheriting to have the stories that they do and to be able to be inspired to write stories of their own. So as I ask others, Clara, I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message can I bring to them from you?
Well, I want to tell them that when I first started writing, I wrote these little adventure stories. Pardon me. These little adventure stories about horses and unicorns and magic horses and flying horses. And just, I was obsessed. And they, you know, looking back, these stories seem kind of silly or unimportant or not worth that much. But these are the stories that got me writing. That's what started all of this. So I want to tell these kids that you're going to see in the morning that if you have ideas inside you that you can't stop thinking about, like stories or poems or songs you want to write or art you want to create or ideas that you want to make real, please don't let yourself think that those dreams are silly or small or not worth much. Sometimes you'll feel afraid to try. You'll feel afraid to take that first step because you'll worry that people will make fun of you or roll their eyes or think you're stupid for bothering to try something so different and big and scary. You'll be afraid of failing. You'll be afraid of messing up. That's okay. That's normal. But your voice, your brain, your heart, your unique creativity, these things are all so important now more than ever. Don't be afraid to use them.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Marcy Colleen joins me to share Super Happy Party Bears, her new chapter book series, and we struggle to contain ourselves. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.